Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be exploring the evolution of the products, tools and fees available to investors in the UK. We're going to be looking at some popular products that people are investing in. We're going to be looking at how fees impact returns. There's going to be some focus on ETFs as well as some of the most popular ETFs out there. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Dan Squires, who is the head of UK sales at Saxo. Dan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, delighted to be here, Jonathan, and thanks for having me on.
So, podcast I'm very much looking forward to because this is a topic that's very important to investors and our listeners. But before we get into it, Dan, please would you be able to give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as Saxo, please?
Absolutely. As you say, I basically look after our retail business in the UK. It's what Saxo calls the direct clients, so individual retail investors, as well as corporate accounts, ISAs, SIPs, all that sort of stuff. I joined Saxo last year, having mainly spent my time in institutional businesses. I was an equity salesman for a long time at Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, as was, that's Bank of America now, and a couple of other places. And then I spent 5 years as part of the management team at a institutional trading business called LiquidNet that runs a dark pool. So kind of a long background of talking to fund managers, talking about stock stories, markets, but very much in the institutional space. And I joined Saxo because I thought it was a super interesting business. And, you know, what I found in my institutional days is technology does make a big difference. Having the right kind of tech stack, having the right product offering is key. And Saxo is, some people say, like the original fintech. Been in business for over two decades. A Danish bank, the parent company, is a bank and is a systemically important financial institution in Denmark. And we're a global business with 1.1 million customers and something over 100 billion of client assets on the platform. So I think it's fair to say in the UK we're a bit less well known. If you went to obviously Denmark, but more broadly Scandinavia, Saxo is a really well known kind of household name. So that's both our challenge and our opportunity in the UK.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So there's a couple of topics that we're going to be discussing today. As I mentioned, we're going to be touching on ETFs and Saxo's offering for ETFs. We're going to be looking at other tools that Saxo offer. But we're going to start off with fees because this is a big consideration for investors. And I believe, Dan, very recently, Saxo have made some pretty big changes to their fee structure. You know, there is a shift across the industry moving towards lower costs. So we're going to be hearing a little bit more about what Saxo have done. But I want to look at the bigger picture, if we may, first. And from where you're sitting and looking at what fees do to the performance of investors, particularly hidden fees, yeah, in trading. You know, how much, obviously, you say you've been in the role for about a year now, and you've obviously overseen this transition to lower fees. You know, what were you seeing before Saxo made this transition in terms of the impact high fees were having on investors?
Yeah, so a few different answers there, I think. I think that the all-in costs of trading and investing are super important for the simple fact that obviously they're a net negative. They're going to detract away from any investment returns that are made. I mean, I think it's really important that investors of all shapes and sizes have a clear understanding of what the fees are, because, you know, if let's take equities, if markets go up 6% a year over the long term, which is sort of what they do, and you are paying 2-3% all-in annual fees, which you could easily do at some places, you know, that's a third of your investment return gone. That you never, that doesn't, you know, it's not helping to grow your money. So fees I think, you know, anyone investing should understand those fees and take a very close look at it. What we found from our perspective is that Saxo has done a great job of being almost a kind of industry secret and used historically by a lot of finance people, city people, hedge funds, lawyers, kind of like professional, financially savvy people, possibly as a much cheaper alternative, better value alternative to using a private bank. I'm talking here people with multi-million pound accounts. But our aspiration and ambition is to grow this business hugely and to take market share away from incumbents in the UK. And so to do that, we took a very close look at pricing. What we concluded is, as you say, the direction of travel in the industry is, particularly with respect to the kind of trading commission, the price, if you like, of buying or selling a share or any other asset. That's what people tend to focus on. And it was also what we had feedback on in terms of our prices being a little bit high. When we did customer surveys and market research, the feedback on Saxo was universally excellent, apart from sort of perception that we were expensive. So we tried to address that in mid-January, and I can talk about the detail. But I think what the other thing I would say is that, of course, it isn't just about that commission, so to speak, on a trade. There are lots of other potential levels of fees, and one I think does get a little bit glossed over, particularly at a time where even in the UK, for UK investors, UK taxpayers, UK residents, there's a lot more global investing going on than was ever the case historically. Currency conversion fees or FX conversion fees can be, you know, they can also be a drag on performance. If you're buying and selling, you know, US shares, Nvidia, Tesla, Magnificent Seven, whatever it is, you're probably going to be incurring one of those fees every single time, moving money backwards and forwards from dollars to pounds. So it's quite complicated. What we've done is we've sort of tried to land in a place which says, look, we're offering a premium platform here. We're offering a premium service. We're offering a institutional grade trading and investing platform. It's not going to be free. And I would say if your listeners, you know, anyone interested, they see these free platforms, the question they should be asking themselves is, well, how's that business making money? And if I'm not paying for the product, you know, the old adage is, well, if you're not paying for the product, then you probably are the product. So Saxo isn't free, but we did put through some pretty drastic decreases. So I'll just give you one example. Our minimum commission on UK stocks used to be £8. It's now £3. On US stocks, the minimum commission used to be $10. That's now $1.
Yes, big changes.
Yeah, and you know, you can imagine that's very impactful to the economics of our business. So we didn't sort of make those changes lightly. But in the round, we're of the view that, you know, investors want to see value for money. They do understand, you know, they're paying these fees. They understand how they add up, and it's a competitive industry with a number of new entrants. So that's where we landed.
Great. So I've got a question here, Dan, about the types of strategies that are employed and how you saw fees being impacted and how that you see that changing going forward, of course, with the changes at Saxo. And you mentioned there about, you know, the steady returns, you know, of 6%, for example. Of course, you know, that could be a broader equity indices. And if you have the fees that mount up there, it does erode that all the time. But of course, you know, the more active traders would be racking up fees as well. Yeah. through the transaction. So, you know, where are you seeing the biggest impact for investors in terms of the strategy? Are you seeing a big benefit you feel for those that are more active on the short term? Or is it really those guys that are looking at the longer term picture that the lower fees are helping?
I think that the biggest impact is going to be on people with the highest turnover. So very active traders. Now, we have three client tiers. which we call Classic, Platinum, and VIP. And our prices and charges do differ across those tiers. And in simple terms, the bigger a customer you are with Saxo, the lower the prices. But if I look at something like, let's say, someone was trading, a VIP client trading a lot of US equities. I quoted earlier that $1 minimum, but that is the minimum. The actual commission, if you were sort of doing big enough trades to be above that, would now be half a cent. That used to be 1 cent. So you can see there someone doing a lot of US equity trading, and basically they've halved their commission bill. Right. What else might be highly relevant would be something like options, where if you were trading contract options, this could be options on the NASDAQ or something. Let's take that. We've gone from $3 to $1 in terms of US dollar contracts. So a huge saving. And we have the interesting thing about Saxo, from my point of view, or more accurately, our clients, is that we have the whole range from people with, you know, an ISA and a smallish amount of money in a kind of general account, to our biggest customers have north of 50 million with us. We've got power traders who are trading probably leveraged assets or very short-term trading strategies hundreds of times a day. And then we've got people who own a couple of stocks and maybe one bond, and they don't do very much trading at all. So the fee, it is a bit client specific, but generally speaking, I would say that the active traders have probably benefited the most. We did also reduce annual custody fees. We did away with our there was something which was called an inactivity fee, if you like. It was a sort of a bit like a membership fee, but it was a fee that to avoid it you had to trade. So it was almost a penalty for inactivity. We chucked that in the bin. That used to be £50 a quarter. So I think the answer to your question is all Saxo clients are saving money, as it were, or have the opportunity. I prefer to look at it like this. They have the opportunity to do more trading for the same amount of fees, or the opportunity to build a more diversified, more interesting investment portfolio, again, for the same or lower fees than was the case previously. Ultimately, if someone has just a sort of buy and hold strategy and does very little, and just holds the same stocks or the same positions from 1 year to the next, then they are going to be saving less.
Fantastic. Thank you. So my next question here is more about Saxo in the context of the evolution of the private investment market and how Saxo are changing as a business to service that. Because, you know, Saxo, you know, going back 10 years, was probably more associated with trading. You know, it was a great platform for futures and options, CFDs. Of course, there were stocks there. But now it's a dramatically different business. And I believe you've gone in a big way into ETFs, which we will speak about later on in the podcast. So it'll be good to get a little bit more in terms of the thinking behind this, Dan, because, you know, it is a big shift in what's happening there. And is that being driven by, you know, what you see as value in terms of an offering for a business? You know, how much is that balanced with the demand that you're seeing from investors and you wanted to serve that as a company?
Yeah, good question. So Saxo is a privately owned business, and the founder and CEO, Kim Fournais, started Saxo effectively as an FX broker. I think it was literally him and one other colleague in a room with a Reuters terminal on the phone. And that's how it started. So the kind of DNA, if you like, was in FX, and then went from there and expanded into other products, and was very much about trading and active traders, and that was where the business grew from. And a lot of that was servicing, you know, pretty serious clients. And so because of that, we ended up with, we own our whole tech stack from front to back, from top to bottom. And in fact, we we have an institutional business where our technology and our flow and some of our other stuff is white labeled, and you know, other banks and fintechs basically use those same Saxo platforms that our retail clients use. So we sometimes call it a weapons grade platform internally. And what that, I think, the way I like to just interpret that is, listen, it does what it says on the tin. It works properly. It's extremely sophisticated. You've got live market prices, proper prices, the same as what you would see on Bloomberg. And we've got this enormous product range. Last time I checked, over 72,000 global assets or possible investments, things that, you know, that clients can access, which is wider than pretty much anyone else. So when we looked at all of that, we said, well, this is great, and we're known in that space, and we do a good job, and people, you know, generally really like Saxo, and we're recognized as a sort of serious player. And I don't say institutional grade lightly. I think the point for your listeners is to understand is that, as an example, you know, we have some hedge fund clients who are broadly speaking using the same Saxo platform to run the hedge funds. So we can have a high level of confidence in it. But really, to grow this business dramatically, which is what we're doing, we need to appeal to the whole space, including investors. And so there is a sort of shift of emphasis, but the pricing change is part of that, as is, I would say, to circle back on what you said, the very broad range of ETFs, and finally the addition of mutual funds to the platform. So where you know, we've ended up is we are a genuine global one-stop shop. There's very little, probably nothing, that the average investor could ever want to trade or invest in that isn't available on our platform. You know, mid-caps, for example, we go far deeper. US mid-caps, slightly obscure names, you probably find that you can get them through Saxo, and you wouldn't be able to get them through some much better known UK investing platforms. We're kind of quite well known for our range of options. Futures, you mentioned, you know, FX, deep FX liquidity, tight spreads, thousands of ETFs. Mutual funds added last year in Saxo UK. Commodities. I was just thinking before we started this podcast, I'm probably going to record a video later, which we'll send out to our clients. I'm going to talk about cocoa. Yeah, cocoa has outperformed Bitcoin. How many people know that? How many people know quite how much money they could have made in cocoa this year? And I think there's 8 different ways you can trade cocoa through Saxo. And I'm pretty sure that won't be true of most of our competitors. So, yeah, we're still very focused on that kind of high-end, quasi-institutional, high-turnover power traders, if you like. But what we also felt is with the right pricing package and the right educational tools and other stuff, we could be really appealing to, shall we say, a sort of more mass market retail investor. So there's a change of emphasis relative to the sort of history of Saxo and where we're going. The only challenge to it, I guess, is you could say that sometimes because we've got 72,000 instruments and, you know, the platform looks a bit like Bloomberg and it's quite kind of techy, sometimes people are a little bit intimidated by that versus what they might find on a much more basic sort of chopped down retail investor platform. The quid pro quo is you just don't have the same sophistication with those players. So I guess, you know, we're trying to appeal to all parts of the market.
Great, and we're going to talk about that now. It's interesting, Dan, that you mentioned cocoa there, because I actually have the Saxo app on my phone. I'm just looking at one of the notifications that came in just as you were saying it. There was a notification there from Saxo highlighting a 4% move in cocoa futures above 10,000 a ton. So these are obviously the notifications that you're sending out to people that have the
yeah.
the app on the phone. So that app. Was a real coincidence.
Well, that's we couldn't have planned that better, and we genuinely didn't. It's just that, as you say, it is
pure coincidence.
It's up 4% today, but I just like it as an example, because if you were to say, do you know it's Easter, we're all going to be eating lots of Easter eggs probably and other stuff, and then you say to people, have you ever looked at cocoa? They'd go, don't be stupid. Why would I look at cocoa? Well, this is the point of a global multi-asset platform. The choice, the list of interesting investment opportunities, the list of things that people are making money in is extraordinarily wide. And that's what I really like. And I think as an investor, there's nothing more frustrating than having an idea and not being able to action it because it's not available. Right. I spoke to a customer last week who wanted to buy shares in a Canadian mining company. It's called, the ticker's TMC. It's just called The Mining Company. And it's a really interesting story. It's about subsea mining. They basically have some very clever ships that effectively they send a pipe down to the bottom of the ocean like a mega high-powered vacuum cleaner, and they hoover up commodity rich sort of mud and dust from the ocean floor. Anyway, the reason that client came to Saxo is they'd done the work. I don't know how they found out about this company, but they became convinced they wanted to invest in it, and it just wasn't available on the provider that shall remain nameless, but where they had their pension and their other savings, they just couldn't, it wasn't available. It is available on Saxo, and it's up about 40% this year. So the ability to go into interesting, slightly esoteric areas like cocoa, like uranium, like mid-cap mining stocks, there'll be lots of other examples. That to me is the point. Good investing is about looking around the world and hoovering up interesting opportunities. So it's no good trying to do that if you're with a provider that just doesn't give you that choice.
No, certainly the availability of instruments is key. I know from doing my own investing and working within the industry, there's always on certain platforms, there's always a lack of stocks. You mentioned there a Canadian mid-cap, they're interesting companies. And for UK investors, it can be frustrating sometimes if you go onto your, let's say, more mainstream platform and not be able to access those. So that's a really good point.
Well, I think we have this conversation all the time, and I've worked in the city for a long time, and I think that city people are very good at making finance and investing more complicated than it actually is. And probably the reason that's it's just because if you make something complicated and sounds intimidating, then you can kind of charge fees for helping people access it. But actually, investing isn't that complicated. I truly believe everyone can do it. One of our company mottos is be curious. Be curious about the world. If you look at Denmark, which obviously our parent HQ is in Copenhagen, and one of the biggest companies in the world now is Novo Nordisk, Danish company, and that's driven a huge amount of kind of investing culture in Denmark because of the success of that national champion. There are interesting stories wherever you look, and that's it's kind of one of our other motto or corporate kind of brand is be invested, because if you're not invested in whatever it is, well, then you can't possibly be making a return. But I just feel that there's so much information out there, probably, the internet and social media has revolutionized that. You just never know where you might find an idea. And so the point is, because you can't necessarily predict that, you want, in my opinion, you want to be with a platform or broker that gives you those opportunities.
Great. So, Dan, we're going to move on now and talk about ETFs, because you mentioned there that institutional grade platform, and you see investing as being simple, and I think ETFs play a big part of that. I mean, especially if we look at the wider markets, and you know, the growth of digital investment managers, they're all very much focused on ETFs. So, yes, you know, given that trend towards that, was that something that Saxo saw and thought this is something we need to be a part of in terms of providing those passive investors and investments to investors that allows them to build, you know, longer term portfolios without that, you know, higher trading activity there? And, you know, what does it look like in terms of the traders, or investors really, I should say, that are coming on board? Is this enabled you to target a broader range of investors and bring them to the Saxo platform?
I would say that it has. I remember reading an article a few months back about BlackRock, and the reason the article was doing the rounds, people looking at it, is BlackRock, I think we can agree, is the world's biggest asset manager, and it was in the headlines because they were making redundancies. But actually, that wasn't the interesting piece. The interesting part was kind of the why, and the comments from Larry Fink, who's the CEO of BlackRock. And what he said was that the investment management industry has never been in the crosshairs of more disruption. And in particular, he was pointing to ETFs. And BlackRock are one of the biggest players in ETFs via their brand name iShares. But I mentioned that because, you know, that's the CEO of the world's biggest asset manager saying that. And what effectively happened is that ETFs have grown like the proverbial weed, right? They've grown from being a slightly obscure product that no one was really quite sure what it was for, 15 years ago, to now being a sort of fascinating, low fee, easy way to invest. And so let me try and kind of make that real. I think even maybe as recently as 5 years ago, let's say, the most common ETF would have been something like an index tracker. So if you'd have said 5 years ago, as a UK investor, I want to have exposure to US equities, you might have invested in a fund, or you might just have bought an S&P 500 tracker. And the reason you might have bought the tracker could have been, well, I don't really believe that active managers outperform over the long term. That could have been a view. Or you might just have said, I'd rather pay lower fees. I mean, if you look at ETFs today, there is a range, but you could easily be paying 20 basis points annual fee, which is not very much. And what we've done as an industry is we've gone from sort of index trackers, passive, you know, just literally copy the index. So if you bought that S&P 500 ETF, you kind of owning the whole index. It's effectively like having built a portfolio of those 500 stocks yourself. You just haven't bothered. You've got iShares or Vanguard or whoever to do it for you, and you've paid a small fee. So that was kind of, yeah. And the irony is, actually, those things have been brilliant investments because markets have gone up, and broad indices, particularly the S&P and Nasdaq, have done very, very well. So that would have been a good strategy. And as we know, the challenge for asset managers, people running funds, is quite honestly their performance hasn't been that good relative to markets. And it's probably not for this call to go into the reasons why, but it's just the fact that the percentage of active managers outperforming has gone down and down over the last few years. But where we are today is that ETF industry has expanded massively now into all sorts of really interesting thematic ETFs. And why this sort of gets me a bit excited is I think that, you know, theme investing is a really powerful and sort of quite easy way to think about investing. So let's take a sort of real world example. So you could say, well, unfortunately there's lots of conflicts in the world, obvious things like Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, Middle East conflicts. You might be concerned about China, South China Seas, China, Taiwan, Donald Trump, you know, talking about NATO not spending enough money. So defense spending's going up. There's more conflict around the world. There's more concerns over the potential for wars. The best performing theme that we monitor at Saxo this year is defense. Now, there's a good number of defense stocks in the UK and Europe. Some of them have done brilliantly well. Rolls-Royce would be an example. There's a lot of interesting defense stocks globally. So you could kind of go, look, I really like that theme. I noticed the other week that the Danish Prime Minister said we need to spend more on defence. And I noticed that last week or the week before, Grant Shapps said the same thing. We're not spending enough of our GDP on defence, is what the UK's defence minister said. Very few European countries spend as much as they're meant to under NATO rules, and we don't spend anywhere near as much as the US. So that could be a powerful investment theme that could run and run. But so, you know, we could all kind of like discuss that and conclude that that was the case. But where it gets tricky is then you go, well, what stock should I be buying? I don't really know. And I don't necessarily have the level of detail to feel comfortable picking a stock. But the beauty of it is, you find there's about, you know, without checking, easily 10 or 15 different defense ETFs. So I just use that as an example of the rise of thematic ETFs as a way of an easy way that looks and feels a bit like an equity. You know, it has a share price. It trades every day. You can buy and sell it whenever you want. The commissions are basically the same as buying a stock. It's not a funny thing like a fund that maybe prices at 2:30 once a day, and sometimes, depending on what it is, could be on a discount or premium to NAV. And an ETF is an easy to understand thing. It's just really a wrapper. And what we've seen is this kind of move from what you might say the plain vanilla, slightly boring index tracker ETFs to much more interesting thematic ETFs. I mean, I've mentioned their defense, but I mean, a better, what I should have probably have said if I was thinking through the lens of what's performed would be something like a technology ETF or a semiconductors ETF. And the performance of some of these ETFs, you know, is absolutely mega. I just had a quick look while I was talking, and using the Saxo platform, I've just used a little function in there that we call the screener. I've looked for the best performing ETFs over the last month that are LSE listed, London listed. So what that means is they're available for retail investors. They have what's known as a KID, key information document, and there's no sort of issue with them. You can just treat them like stocks. The top performing names are all gold miners and gold producers. And I'm looking here at the 1 month return. You know, iShares, gold producers, VanEck, gold miners, Legal & General Gold Mining, they're all up 13 to 15% in a month. Now, you could have just owned gold. Maybe you could have owned a single stock that was a gold miner. Or you just say, well, an ETF's a nice, easy way to do it. And I'll be exposed to probably, without checking, 30 different things within that ETF. So we kind of love ETFs because I think it speaks to the democratization of investing. It's a very clever product that makes it easier for retail investors to build a super interesting portfolio with a high degree of diversification. And most of these things, you know, they genuinely have very low fees, 20, 30, 40 basis points, sort of annual management fee. So we've seen a huge amount of interest and growth in our ETF business. We have thousands on the platform. Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's an industry trend that is probably just gonna run and run. Another example would be investing in bonds. You know, a lot of retail investors might not be entirely comfortable with the idea that they're gonna buy an actual bond, let's say gilt in the UK. They might not know how to do that or even really how it works and how does price and yield and coupon, and you know, they might be out of their comfort zone with that. But at the same time, they might be well aware, well, there's some interesting, you know, low risk returns on offer in the world of bonds. Maybe interest rates have peaked, right? So yields are going to come down and I'm going to make some money. So, you know, we've seen huge inflows into fixed income ETFs, bond ETFs, because, yeah, you know, as I say, you've taken an investment view. You've just expressed it through a really easy to understand ETF that looks a bit like an equity. And so there's a lot of different things behind the growth of ETFs. My view would be it's probably going to continue because retail investors, you know, I think what they find appealing is easy to understand products that are not too complicated and kind of do what it says on the tin with low fees, and that's what ETFs do.
So you mentioned there, Dan, a number of the best performing over the last month, and you obviously mentioned the defence was an interesting one, and of course gold miners.
Yeah.
But in terms of from what you can see, what are the most popular ETFs on Saxo at the moment? You know, I don't know whether you have data on the number of accounts, percentages, whatever it may be, but, you know, what are the most widely bought ETFs by Saxo clients?
Right. So, good question. I'm going to give you two answers. If I look at the value of our clients' holdings, so what the people actually own in their Saxo accounts, the two most popular ETFs are actually S&P 500 trackers. And then after that, we get into things like MSCI Emerging Markets, Socially Responsible ETF, Bond ETF, MSCI World, which is obviously, as the name suggests, like a super wide exposure to just to global. And then, so those and then other bond funds. So those are the biggest by value, and I think I can understand that because looking backwards, the S&P 500's been an amazing investment, and as the name suggests, there's 500 companies. Even though markets are quite narrow, and that index has somewhat been driven by the Magnificent Seven and a small list of tech stocks, but still. It's a proxy basically for American equities and bonds for the reason I said. If I look at the last three, one of the things you can do on our platform, which I quite like, is you can search by popularity. So you could be sort of beginning your investing journey and not be entirely certain, maybe, I don't know, where to start. What is it quite interesting to look at what are other people doing? So if I look at the last month's popularity, and again, I've just screened this for London listed ETFs because we probably don't want to get into it. There's a lot of other ETFs that as a normal retail investor you can't use because they don't have the correct documents under EU rules. So I've filtered for London listed, which means they're accessible. And some of it is what I've said already. In particular, it's government bonds, it's emerging markets, it's MSCI World. But Japan would be a good example. That's in there. The iShares Core MSCI Japan UCITS ETF. I think it's probably the performance of the Japanese market will have caught people's eye. But it's probably unlikely that people, apart from a handful of maybe household names, will know that much about specific Japanese equities. Another example would be India. Very hard to buy Indian stocks. You can buy some ADRs, but quite easy to buy some Indian ETFs. And, India's still growing extremely strongly. I think the economy grew at 15% last quarter and the stock market's been making new highs. So that's something we've seen interest in. Even, you could I had a conversation with a client. We were talking about the rise of Saudi Arabia and Saudi's influence on sport. Let's use that as an example. And the way that they've made inroads into football and Premier League, and they've sort of they've had a huge impact on the world of golf. And if anyone's been on holiday, to that region in the last few years, you can't help but notice, obvious examples like Dubai, but increasingly Saudi Arabia. So, you might just go, well, there's something interesting going on there, which in simple terms, I think, is sovereign wealth funds diversifying the country's wealth, trying to move their economy's reliance away from oil and basically investing in all sorts of other stuff. But how do you move beyond those thoughts? Quite difficult. But you could buy a Saudi ETF. There's really no limit to this. So those are some of the most popular. One other thing I'd point to, which is getting into slightly more complex territory, but there are some very interesting leveraged ETFs. Now, this is an interesting one for us because we offer CFDs and, we offer margin trading. So what that is effectively customers can borrow money from Saxo and effectively trade, on a leverage basis, put more money to work than they actually have. But if you don't want to do that, there are some very interesting leveraged ETFs. So what's an example I could give? One of the most popular would be Tesla. You know, Tesla is sharply down this year. I'm just going to check. I think it's down. I'll find out. Down about 25% year to date, something like that. There is a 2x levered short Tesla ETF. Tesla's down 30% year to date. So you can imagine if you'd been exposed to that twice levered short Tesla, in theory, you could have made 60% since the 1st of January. So again, an example of where, there's a whole new subgenre of ETFs, long and short. So there's a kind of baked in leverage to those products. Now there, if someone has a very strong view on a Tesla, it's probably not a medium to long term investment vehicle, but you could be trading that in and out every day or every week. Quite interesting.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Dan. So just want to finish off now with, you know, very comprehensive conversation there, some great insights. Thank you very much. But just to finish off, yeah, and to bring it all together,
yeah,
it would be interesting if you could conclude with, you know, three things that Saxo are doing to help your clients' outcomes, please.
Yes. Yeah, it's a great question. So look, we want good client outcomes because we want happy clients. Happy clients tend to sort of refer their friends and that sort of thing. And we want to be running a business here, or we are, that in simple terms, it helps people grow their wealth. It helps them make money. I mean, that's kind of the point. There's no point investing unless you're growing your wealth. And that's what the Saxo platform is here to do, to empower people to do that for themselves and to not pay unnecessary fees to whoever it may be. But, you know, we could look at private wealth managers or the likes of St. James's Place to choose one where, you know, the sort of value for money is not immediately apparent. So we do want that. And also we have a regulatory duty under something called consumer duty to ensure good outcomes. So to answer your question, there is a huge amount of free content on our website and on our platform, which falls under the broad category, we call it research. Examples, what does that mean in practice? Like a daily morning note, podcasts with our strategists, a team of strategists based in Copenhagen, writing on commodities, technicals, equities, bonds. They're producing stuff daily. We offer about 30 different investment themes. I mentioned that the top performing theme this year was defense. I mean, there's others in there around sustainability or AI or lithium for electric vehicles or crypto and blockchain. So we produce those themes, we write on them, and we identify stocks that could benefit if the theme is correct. We're big on risk management. So we're always encouraging clients to think about stop loss orders, for instance, to think about a more diversified portfolio. One of the things about lower prices is it's actually quite shocking how narrow lots of the portfolios of our clients are. It's not uncommon for people to literally own two positions. And let's say those positions were Nvidia and Novo Nordisk. You know, they will have done extremely well, multiplied in value over the last 2 years. We're constantly pumping out what's meant to be thought-provoking content around the power of diversification. Why don't you consider hedging? We do educational pieces on things like clever use of options. It's not that sort of complicated or hard to understand something like covered calls. So you own a stock, you might be a long-term bull, and you basically write call options as a way of receiving a bit of option premium and kind of hedging yourself. So, as an execution-only broker, we don't make recommendations. But what we do is an awful lot of, interesting thoughts, themes, and ideas. Video content, how-to guides, real even basic webinars, how to use the platform, how to research companies, what the technical signals mean. we embed technical signals as well in the platform for those who are interested in, you know, chartism and technical things. It's all kind of there, and it's all part of the service. So I think that would be my answer. You know, we don't just leave customers to fend for themselves. We can't say buy this or sell that, but we could say, oh, you know, maybe you should look over here. There's something interesting going on, and we provide the tools and the information for people to do that.
Thank you very much, Dan. That's been fascinating. So if people want to know more, where's the best place for them to go?
So I would say that, probably the obvious start point would just be the website. So if people just Google Saxo UK, that'll take them to the right place. Huge amount of information on there about the pricing, about the platform, about the different types of accounts. The trading app itself is, I call it an app because over 50% of our customers are now using the mobile version, but it's a desktop platform as well. And the account opening process is just straight from the website. So that would be the place to go. The Saxo, just Google Saxo UK and start there.
That's great. Sorry, Dan.
No, I was just going to say as well, we're reasonably active on social media. So people will find stuff on Instagram or on LinkedIn and other social media. They could also look out for the podcast of the Saxo Strategist, which I get a lot of positive feedback on.
Thank you. So, Dan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.